The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, uupinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York Governor Kathy Hochul. Governor Hochul began her career in public service on her local town board before serving as Erie County Clerk and then as a member of Congress for New York's 26th Congressional District. She more recently served in statewide office as Lieutenant Governor and now as the first female governor of the state of New York. Governor Kathy Hochul, it is a great pleasure to welcome you to the Capital Connection. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you, Alan. Looking forward to a very interesting, spirited conversation. Overdue, I owed you one, but now we've got a lot to talk about after the budget, so we're going to have a great conversation.
You are the best. Thank you. Okay, so let me start by asking you what it's like to be the first female governor.
Well, thank you for that question. I try not to think about it much because I'm just acting like a governor, period. But that is an extra dimension, which is really exciting for women out there. And I actually shouldn't say just women. I can't tell you the number of fathers who come up to me with their little girls or their teenage daughters who just really want to just introduce them and say, this can be you. And I'm really cognizant of the fact that the responsibility I have is to not just succeed, but as women are often having to do in all their professions, you know, they have to exceed expectations. And so I know that weight is on my shoulders. I'm working hard every single day to do just that. So when I'm all finished, how many years to come, people will look back and say, there's no question that a woman can handle the most complicated, fascinating place in this country, but known for its rough and tumble politics. And not just my survival, but my ability to thrive in this environment really shows that women are tough enough to do it. But Alan, we govern differently. We govern with the toughness, but it's not about denigrating others or having winners and losers. It's about lifting others up and forging forth a coalition of leaders and people that are with me. And I've lifted up other elected officials and shared success with them. And I'm showing people, you know what, we can get the job done, but it doesn't have to be so personal and competitive because people are sick and tired of us fighting each other. They want us to be fighting for them. So I've reestablished new relationships with the legislature, with the city of New York, and other places, and I'm going to continue doing just that. So people will see when I'm all done, women can do it, and they do it damn good.
There are so many questions I have out of what you just said, but let me start with this one. Some of that sounded like Andrew Cuomo was somewhere lurking in the background.
I don't know that to be the case. No, this is just being the first. You know, whether you're the first African-American woman on the Supreme Court, you know that everyone is watching you closely. I'm in that same position, regardless who held these seats before. You know we have a special responsibility to our gender to show that there are no barriers. We can be successful. We're just as tough. We're just as smart. We're just as bold and visionary. And as a result, people will make their determinations, but I feel very confident that we're doing the right things, and that's what I'm focused on, not what other people say. But I know the responsibility of this job better than anybody. As lieutenant governor for many years, I learned this state. I've learned all the communities, all their needs. I know the people. And because of that, I'm really well positioned to lead forth, and we've done just that.
Governor Hochul, now that you have raised the issue of lieutenant governor, there is, of course, that question. You don't have a lieutenant governor right now. Yours quit or was pushed, whatever, and isn't there anymore. What do you got in mind?
Well, that was an enormously disappointing situation, but in the context of also simultaneously learning about a subway shooting, I was able to prioritize quickly, get down to the site of the shooting, suspend other events so I could be there with the people who in hospitals, et cetera. So I'm very good at compartmentalizing, Alan. So we knew we would have to deal with this, but in the immediacy, I had to focus on people that were hurting in Brooklyn at that moment and the anxiety and why I took the subway that day to show my confidence in it. So now we have to go through a process to find another replacement, and we'll be very thorough. I'll have a larger team to do vetting. As you know, last time we were just I was still lieutenant governor when we had to start this small team. And you know what? I wish it had turned out differently. I wish we had more information at the time, but you know, knowing what I do now, yeah, we would have gone in a different direction for sure. But, you know, I can handle, you know, this, and I also know that people are not focused on that. They want me to name someone as soon as I can, but that'll be after extensive background. And in the meantime, Andrea Stewart Cousins, you know, who I've spoken with and have a very strong relationship with, she is constitutionally the acting lieutenant governor. So the continuity of government continues. We don't miss a beat, and we move forward.
Did you ask her if she wanted the job?
We haven't had that conversation yet. I just had to deal with the immediacy of, I need to know that she's prepared. She's absolutely prepared. In fact, we were together just a few days ago making an incredible announcement for the city of Mount Vernon, which is one of the most impoverished, you know, the most African-Americans in any city north of the Mason-Dixon line. And for decades, their pleas for help were ignored. Their sewer and their sanitary sewers are disgusting, if you saw the documentaries about it. So I was with her just a couple days ago announcing $150 million. It was the most powerful event I've done as governor, to see the people who worked so hard to make this happen, who never dreamed it would happen until there was a governor who actually listened to them and got the job done. So I was just with her at that event. It was really important, the largest environmental justice project in the entire nation. And Washington had representatives there. They're watching what we do. They know we're fixing a lot of racial disparities from the past. And so Andrea and I had a chance to chat there. And, yeah, she's ready, willing, and a strong, strong ally. So New Yorkers should feel comfortable at this time right now that we have it under control.
Is there a criteria? I mean, for example, should the lieutenant governor, if you're white, be black?
As everyone sees the administration I put together, I have the most diverse administration, you know, racially, sexual orientation, gender, of any administration that has ever come before. So people know I prioritize that to make sure that all the voices of New Yorkers are really well represented and are in positions of power and authority to make up for a lot of years where they were held back. And I feel that I can be the training ground for other individuals. So I will look at all the factors, Alan, but I'm not going to say that there is a litmus test as to what I'm looking for, other than someone who's got the heart of a public servant that I do, who wants to get out there and work just as hard as I did as lieutenant governor. And I got a lot of accolades for the fact that I just was unrelenting in my pursuit of serving the people in that capacity, which now, you know, is a record that I can talk about and go forward. So I want someone who's got that same sense of purpose and really believes in the nobility of public service and will never denigrate it and respect it. And I'm going to take the right amount of time to get that accomplished.
Governor, there is a bill to drop Lieutenant Governor Benjamin from the ballot. He's now quit. But, of course, there's a question as to whether you're going to be saddled with him running with you when you're running for governor the next time. So what do you think about that? Do you think it's a good idea? But Republicans, of course, are charging that it's just a move to save you from political embarrassment. What do you think?
First of all, I'm not thinking about what the Republicans are criticizing. They criticize the breakfast I have every day. So I don't really pay attention to
what
Republican criticism. I have a power bar and an energy drink that sets me forth the whole day. That's how I power through every day, my great energy drink. So let's hear what the Republicans have to say about that one. What I'm going to do is take a look at whatever passes the legislature. You know, this is obviously talked about and initiated by legislators. It's their responsibility if they choose to go down that path. You know, there are some other options. They're limited, of course. I'm not being naive about it, but, you know, there are some other options that are still on the table. But this too shall pass, Alan. As my mother used to always say, you know, people thought we'd never get through, you know, our first few weeks of establishing myself, and there's all kinds of threats from other candidates, and would I ever raise enough money? And I've had so many milestones that we've had to break through where people said this will be what takes her down. This will not be what has any effect on my ability to get through the election successfully and as well as govern successfully.
Do you have a short list for lieutenant governor?
Well, it's down to 20 million people, Alan. It has to be a New Yorker.
That's a lot.
How about that
one?
Okay, well, actually, last, I got to segregate out how many are over 18. So we've had a lot of people express interest. They believe that our administration is going to be transformative, and that's what I wanted. When you see what we've accomplished thus far, again, a lot of things that people said we just would not ever get done, and we're proving them wrong every day. So I don't mind detractors. I don't mind people that are underestimating me. Once again, it's happened my entire life. And I say, bring it on. We will prove by our leadership, but also the results. And I know New Yorkers, Alan, they're not sitting at the kitchen table worrying about whether a bill gets passed related to the lieutenant governor or who's that. They want a governor who just stops the drama, focuses on them, not herself, and gets the job done. And I know that, and that is why I feel empowered every single day to just get up and knock it out of the park.
Hey, Governor, can we talk about the Buffalo Bills? There are some people who think that the stadium, rebuilding stadium, is going to cost too much. New Yorkers shouldn't pay for it. The people who own the Bills or don't even live in New York. What do you make of that?
Well, I encourage everybody to become New York residents if they're not already. It's a wonderful state, but I'm happy to walk you through that because this was a major regional priority. They were hoping to have, you know, some focus on it before I ascended to this position, but there was a lot of other things going on. So the problem is the clock was ticking because the stadium that they've been in, you know, was built in 1972, 100% public dollars, by the way, but again, that was a long time ago. They started having crumbling upper decks, and they knew that it would not be able to hold on for many more seasons, so they're very anxious to either find out if they're going to have a new stadium or look at other cities. And as a Western New Yorker, we have lived with this sword of Damocles over our heads my entire life. Are they going to Toronto? Are they going to go to San Diego now? Are they going to go to Florida? And those conversations were happening in earnest. And so I also knew that this is important to Western New York's identity. And when I'm in New York City and people ask about it, I say, just like Broadway is innately part of New York City's image, the Buffalo Bills are part of Western New York's image. So the local legislators, Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes, Senator Tim Kennedy, our other legislators, everybody knew this had to happen. So how do we make it happen, Alan? I don't want to spend too much time on it because I'm sure you have other questions, but let me walk you through quickly.
Sure.
Great. We also knew that there could not be an amount of money from the public that was excessive. They wanted the whole thing paid for by the taxpayers. That was the first position they had, or at least $1 billion. We said, no, that's not reasonable. Let's talk about the state's share. So we negotiated it down to $600 million, which we calculated when you tax the income tax on the player's salaries. Now, these are very highly paid individuals. God bless them, but they make a lot of money. We would have this paid off by year 22 of a 30-year agreement. I got them to stay for 30 years, which is extraordinary. But by the 22nd year, the state of New York is made whole based on income that if they left, and they would leave if this wasn't done. So it's offset by that. But I also said, you know, this county negotiated their own share. So I was responsible for what is basically 43% of the deal, which is one of the lower contributions. Again, the number is high because the cost of stadiums have gone up. And so a small marketplace like Buffalo, it is almost impossible to even think of a city that small, a region that small, to have a major league team, and it is the only team that plays in New York. So there was a lot of reasons, again, a major regional asset. And when I'm in Buffalo, I hear all about, you know, why are we spending so much money on mass transit in the city? And what about the Long Island Railroad stations? And what about Penn Station? And what about this? Believe me, when I go anywhere, Alan, anywhere in the state, I'm hearing about the other part of the state somehow getting more.
Yeah.
So I feel like the mother of a big family and all the kids are competing and I can handle it. You know, this is important to Western New York, Rochester, Buffalo. And now we have a lot of major projects I'm really excited to talk about for the rest of the state. But we got the deal done. I'll take the conversation about it anytime and just explain to people really what was behind it.
Let me ask you about your affiliations. Are you a Buffalo Bills fan?
I sure am. And you know what? When I'm in New York City, especially after the last two seasons they've had, I can't tell you the number of, and all when I'm walking the streets in Albany and I'm going out to a restaurant and people talk to me, everybody shows me like a picture of the Buffalo Bills on their cell phone or they're just, you know, everybody's showing me like, yeah, they play in New York, don't they? This is New York's team. Now, we got to love our Jets and Giants. Of course we do. But we know where they play, Alan, and so this is a point of pride for New Yorkers as the team's reputation continues to grow, and I believe they're going to hit the Super Bowl next year. So let's just like we spent millions and millions of dollars to help lift up Broadway and restaurants in New York City and Javits Center and conventions, Western New York and the North Country and the South, they don't benefit from that either. So let's just really recognize that this was an important dynamic, that pressure was on for timing because the stadium is crumbling. They needed clarity. And now we got the deal done for 30 straight years. They're going to be here in the state of New York. That is something to celebrate.
And so when it comes to baseball, who's your affiliation with?
Oh, you're just going to get me in trouble, aren't you?
Yes, that's what I'm trying to do here, yes.
Okay. Well, I will tell you, when you grow up in Western New York, for some reason, even though the Blue Jays are close and our local team is affiliated with the Blue Jays, I go to a lot of Buffalo Bisons games. That's the minor league team that plays right in downtown Buffalo. So I go to those games. I was just there. But they also be affiliated with the Mets. So I learned a lot about the Mets when they were with the Mets. But a lot of Western New Yorkers are big Yankees fans. So I have I don't want to say torn between a couple teams. But when I'm at the Mets games, I love the energy, kind of that fighting spirit you get in Queens. And I love the bravado that you get when you're at a Yankees game in the Bronx. And I've been to both. And, you know, I just love sports, love our teams. And I'm going to be out there just like I'm on stages on Broadway celebrating that. I'm going to be out there warming up. And I do this, I want you to know, Alan, I take first pitches very seriously. The most stressful thing I've done as elected official, and I'm not making this up because I can handle any other stress, was thrown out a first pitch at a Yankees game last summer when they actually played in Buffalo against the Blue Jays. I was so afraid I was going to, you know, throw it over just like Dr. Fauci did because he had just done it a couple weeks before. And I thought, I'm going to go viral. I'm going to get clobbered for this. My family was very anxious. So, you know, I love sports. It's part of our identity. And we have amazing teams in our state and great fans, too.
Talk to me about ethics reform. You know, everybody holds their hands over their noses when it comes to New York State ethics, as practiced by our politicians. I know you have some concerns about this. How do you think we can fix it?
Well, we've had a good start. There's always more to do, and I'll say that right from the get-go, but we knew that we had to have an ethics commission, who is now known as Jacob, one that worked differently, and I found out there were a lot of reasons that they were held back from really being able to do their job. There were very high voting requirements before they could make a decision. You know, you had to have 8 of the members vote yes instead of a majority, so that was a problem. Also, you know, they weren't subject to the open meetings law and FOIL, even the votes. So I thought that was a problem, so we got that changed in the budget. Also, you know, we had to have improved training for staff and notice to victims. You know, we want deadlines on findings can be reported. And also how they're selected, when you think about the fact that, you know, this is a body that's watching the chicken coop, and it's, you know, you're letting the foxes pick the members. And yeah, I think the members are doing the best they can, but they come from an environment where people don't have a lot of trust when you have direct appointees coming from the people that are supposed to be observed and have their actions, you know, monitored by the Ethics Commission. So we talked about having at least another layer of detachment. I first wanted to have the law school deans or their designee be able to be involved in being members. But, you know, I had to get this through the legislature. And this had a lot of concerns raised about doing anything at all, which I said we have to deliver. And let's get something done. Let's make a difference. And so now the recommendations on members can be put forth to the law school deans and or their designee. And so there's at least another screening process. You can't have such a close relationship because we saw how that worked before. So there's a whole history that I'm sure you've covered plenty of times. I know everybody else has. So we have a lot to do to restore people's faith. But I said this when I first became governor on August 24th. I said, my number one job is to restore people's faith in government once again. And it won't happen overnight. I'm supposed to change an entire culture that has been embedded in Albany for a long time. But you know what? I'm out there trying every single day. And it starts with the Oversight Commission, which is our new Ethics and Lobbying Commission, which will be ramping up. And I thank the legislators for their help on putting that together. But we have a way to go. And it's not finished yet. Yeah. We're not finished.
Talk to me, Governor, if you will, about budget negotiations behind closed doors. It used to be, of course, 3 men in a room. Now it's 2 women and a man in a room. That's some progress. And I'm wondering whether there's a way to open this up a bit more.
Well, we put out our budget, I think it was released on January 18th, and certainly there's an opportunity for the legislature to have hearings on every part of it. You know, those hearings should be reviewed by the public and the media, and they can have all the scrutiny they need during that, you know, what is a first draft of a blueprint going forward. And we worked very hard on that. Again, we had since the beginning, you know, literally September, when we had to deal with hurricanes, and I had to get 400 bills signed before the end of December and look at all kinds of issues, and then to work on our very first state of the state and a first budget, we got the job done. But we also know that we're in a compressed time frame. I'm literally working on the next year's budget right now and our state of the state right now to make sure that we have a thoughtful approach. Now we'll have the benefit of time for next year. So that is what we didn't have before. But I agree. I want to restore people's faith in the process. But we put out information. Most of it early on so it can be studied and reviewed. But when it really gets down to, you know, the give and take of me representing the state, you know, all New Yorkers, and I'm working with our legislators who represent their conferences and their interests and their constituents, we got the job done. And people thought we couldn't get it. If you read all sorts of, you know, speculation and criticism, will I be up for the task? Or am I going to get rolled over? Will there be any policy in there because I wanted policy? Yes, we got the job done. We have a transformative budget. It is also going to be able to be, it's fiscally responsible, and we're excited about some bond rating changes coming out shortly, but we also have the ability to pay for our budget all the way through 2027 with very small, if any, out-year gaps. So I was very concerned about not overspending just because we have a one-time surplus. You'll see in our budget, much of what it is in terms of the high numbers, those are just this year alone, because we had one-time money from the federal government, so we didn't invest in programs with that money that's going to be needing the resources going forward, because that would not be fiscally responsible. And so a lot of it was immediate rent relief or immediate concern about people's utilities being behind because of the pandemic and all those other programs. So you'll see a different budget next year because we're going to work within our means. We are not raising taxes. And again, there was a lot of pressure to consider, you know, by some sectors of even, you know, my party, the far left side of the party, wanted taxes raised. And I said, you know what, we have to set aside money in reserves. I have to be ready if we end up a year from now, 2 years down the road, if we get another pandemic and the vaccines and the virus is vaccine resistant and we literally start over again, I have to be able to know that New York can take care of itself. We can pay for the vaccines. We can pay for test kits. We'll be able to pay for all the extra staffing, pay for real support for nursing homes, because I can't count on the federal government to bail us out anymore. I just can't. So I needed to set aside money that other forces wanted to be spent this year. I said, no, we know what we have. You know, like any family has to balance their budget and think about the future. That's why this budget is transformative in its scope and helping in healthcare and education and infrastructure and childcare, the climate. We have such extraordinary measures to help protect our climate, but we're not going to do it in a way that cripples our ability to take care of ourselves and be ready for future challenges, whether it's hurricanes, whether it's viruses, or whatever comes my way. We've seen it all this year, and if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger, Alan, and no one's stronger than I am to tackle the future tasks, the future challenges that come our way.
Glad to hear it. Governor, on redistricting, is this a fair process? I mean, you got two houses and a Democratic governor. Could they have done any more to help themselves win elections?
You know, I saw the lines when they were done being drawn and were in the media. I said, I need to be detached from this process, which is what was important for me, so I was not engaged in this. And yes, we can always do better in this space. When I was a member of Congress, one of the reasons I did not go back, I lost the second year by 1.4%. Alan, I'll get over that someday, but that was the most Republican conservative district in the state. It was redistricting a year ago, and the lines were made in my district even more conservative. Yes, there's always going to be a better way to do it. Other models in other states, we saw California take a pass at it in a different way a few years ago. I'm not sure that worked out so well. So we're going to keep working with our good government groups, and I brought them to the table very early on in my administration, and they're absolutely delighted about some of our early initiatives, again, responding to FOIA requests early instead of burying them and hoping they go away and having people watch for them and be able to pull them out and have the second floor say yes or no. We've been very thoughtful in how we can engage with groups who have ideas, the League of Women Voters and others. You know, and I used to be president of my local league a long time ago. I know how important good government actually is, but as well as the perception of good government. People have to have faith in their government or democracy breaks down, and that's not happening under my watch.
Let's talk about bail reform. A huge question here about the uptick in crime and gun violence, and it's caused consternation between members of your own party, Democrats. I know that you have had a little bit of a more centrist position on this than others have. So what do you make of it?
I think my position was the right one to take, that we had to do a lot of negotiations. Again, this was an issue that many people are very passionate about. And I will always stand by the fundamental premise behind bail reform. as Lieutenant Governor, I traveled the state in areas that were not welcoming with this idea. I spoke about it at chambers of commerce and places that people didn't understand it. And I said, there is no system of justice. If two people accused of the exact same offense, one goes, again, this is a lower level offense, is what I always used to say, lower level offense. One goes home to their job or back to school, their families take care of them because they have money. Someone without the resources or the support system, they're sitting in jail. They could be sitting in Rikers Island, which is a hellhole. So that was unfair. Something needed to be done. But what we saw is that there were crimes that should have been bail eligible or remand eligible that were left out. And I'm talking about some serious gun charges. So we added factors that judges should consider. We added more crimes back under bail eligible as opposed to those who are sent home without anything, any requirements that they have to meet a threshold. We changed some loopholes on discovery because the prosecutors were saying, listen, a lot of our cases are being dismissed because of a technicality. And so we worked with prosecutors and public defenders, brought them together at the same table, worked through this. So now the district attorney, the statewide district attorney association, said that they support what we've done to help deal with that. Repeat offenders, Alan. How often are we hearing about repeat offenders, those people that are walking into stores and clearing the shelves day after day after day, and they could do it and only get basically a parking ticket, an appearance ticket as a result. And hate crimes. You know, you wouldn't believe the battles over putting hate crimes in there. And I spoke at a hate crimes rally just a couple of days ago, literally the day after the shooting in Brooklyn. I went out there with Asian groups and Jewish groups and said, you know what, we toughened the law. We have your back. We're fighting for you. But on the other hand, I'm going to continue to protect individual rights. We don't want to head toward mass incarceration. And that's why we liberated the whole cannabis process to give people in those communities that have been hard hit before an opportunity to start getting some of the proceeds. So it's a very balanced approach.
I don't want to interrupt, but I want to say I only have a minute left and I want to ask you, should ex-President Trump be prosecuted?
That's a curveball. We're talking about the state budget. In my judgment, crimes were committed, yes.
Well, that's pretty impressive. Our guest has been New York Governor Kathy Hochul. Governor Hochul, I really appreciate your coming on. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you. Talk to you soon.